Yes, welcome back to the Burst Bot Scottish Football Podcast. It was another busy weekend. 6 games, 17 goals, 2 home wins, 3 away wins and a draw. And we've got 4 brilliant panel members here. Me, Hamish Carton, Callum Scott.
Delighted to be back, as my catchphrase is, Hamish. So after a few weeks absence, so thank you for having me.
Good to have you on. Matt Finlay joining us again.
Yeah, good to be back. It's been, again, all for me, also a few weeks, so I'm ready to get stuck into it.
And the ever-present Callum Fisher again.
It's good to be here. Back was getting a bit sore carrying the podcast and that, so I'm glad the boys can join us this week.
Good stuff. Well, we're going to get in, as we usually do, and chat about all the stuff that happened at the weekend. We'll start with the stuff that happened on Saturday. Why don't we start with your mob, Casey, because you've kind of turned things around a little bit. We know we've got a fair Killy contingent of listeners out there, so they can just listen to this wee bit and then decide to do what they want after that. But you guys have definitely turned things around, a couple of wins in a row, and you're up to 5th in the table, best of the rest.
Oh, well, absolutely. Funny you say that, because there is just such a massive gap between the top four and everyone else in the league. Obviously, it looks pretty good to see Kilmarnock back up in fifth, but you realise, I think it's only 4 points clear of the bottom on that one. I did say the other week there, and I know you gave it a shout out in the podcast last week, that these 3 games would kind of define Dyer's season. Obviously, Hamilton at home last week, which we were able to win with 10 men. It's a credit where it's due. Away to St Mirren on Saturday there, which is another good fine away win. And then obviously we've got Motherwell Friday night. And then after that, it's obviously international break. And then it's Livingston. So realistically, I think that we should be looking at taking minimum 4 points for those next 2 games as well. So I'm going to add in the Livingston game in there, considering the good start he's had with the other two. So not much more you can ask for that. I watched it in the pub, which it's just not the same. I know we can talk about it all the time, but you just don't take in much of the game either. Obviously, you're relying on streams and stuff. So, but for what I gathered from it, I thought first half we were miles ahead of them. Could maybe have done with creating a wee bit more chances, but anytime I really actually tried to take in as much of the game as I could, we never looked under threat. Constantly looked comfortable, and it's good to get a clean sheet, because obviously the defence and goalkeeper have come into a wee bit of criticism this season, so no credit where it's due. And as I said, a really good result against a team that everybody after a couple of games was raving about St Mirren. I said we'll see where we are after a good few, and obviously that's been telling now with Kilmarnock, a good few places above them in the league.
Yeah, 3 wins in 4 for you. Obviously that defeat at Pittodrie, the only one you haven't won in your last 4. What do you feel's changed over those, last 4 games, or even maybe the last couple of games that you've won?
Well, obviously it's good to have a striker in form, obviously with Kibamba. I think it's his 4th goal of the season there. It's his first away goal for Kelly as well, I think, if I'm right in saying all his other goals have came at Rugby Park, so which is good for him. It's a right good striker's finish as well. As cliche as it is, his goals have all been mixed this season. Good bullet header against Dundee United, good finish running through the keeper with his weak foot against United as well. Hamilton kind of instinctive striker's finish, and then the one on Saturday was the same, all in the 18-yard box, which is what you're wanting for your number, well, who's playing in the number 9 position. So no, obviously that's helped Chris Burke having a wee bit of form. Greg Kilty as well, I'll give him a shout out. It's great to see Kilty back in the team. But we're giving ourselves a wee bit of a problem here, because a lot of these guys are out of contract next season, so straight away I'd be looking at tying up Kibamba, Kilty, even maybe another year out of Chris Burke if you can get him. And then obviously you get Finlay and Brophy out of contract at the end of the next season as well. So, I think, as I said, it was all these winnable games. The only games we've been outplayed this season was Rangers. We never laid a glove on them. Every other game, I think, that we've been unfortunate not to at least get a point from, never mind no winning. So it's been winnable games in front of them. And as I said, hopefully on Friday we can carry that on and beat Motherwell.
You're always the kind of cynic, aren't you? You're never really too high, even when Kelly are doing well.
Have I not been pretty fair with my analysis?
You're bringing in all the contract situation and all that. I'm just pointing out that you're ever the kind of cynic in the room.
Unless Steve Clark, the Steve Clark era was everything but the cynic. But no, I'm just saying that it's a good problem we have, that these guys are on form. But realistically, we're getting into January and they can go and sign pre-contracts elsewhere. So I'd like them to tie Kilty and Kabamba up to longer deals and try and get Finlay or Brophy. I'm not saying obviously we haven't attempted that, but because Finlay and Brophy are two sellable assets, so we don't want them going for nothing either. So but that's just a sign point. The main thing is we're winning games again, and as I said, hopefully we can just keep that form on. And if we, I'd say, get 4 points at these next two games, I'd say that's been a fair return for the first round of fixtures. Because there's no denying that the rest of the league, the standard's very, very poor. Inconsistency more than anything. The top four are miles ahead, and then everybody else is kind of scrapping about, and there's a couple of places up for grabs in the top six. So hopefully we can get one of those.
So it's a good run for Kelly over the last month or so. Really good run for Nicky Kabamba as well. What do we think, guys, about his level and how good he can be? Because he probably is one of the better strikers in Scotland at the moment, dare I say, with the goals he's scoring, Matt?
No, definitely. I mean, I've only kind of been able to see from the sports scene highlights every week and so on, but he's certainly kind of what Kelly have been missing, really. They've not, you know, Brophy, I think, he offers something different in Brophy, but you saw the link-up play with him and Burke for that first goal. You know, it's the kind of confidence of just kind of being able to take on, you know, get into those positions that maybe they've lacked. And, you know, for a team like Kelly, who obviously have ambitions to kind of be in the top six and around it and kind of pushing the Old Firm in games, etc., you know, you're needing a player like that. And I think having someone like Kabamba in there is only going to do them good, because as Casey just talked about, you know, it's a bit of a scrap in some of the games just out with the top four at the moment. And if they can even try and start building a gap, you know, because as you rightly said, they're only 4 points off of the relegation places, if you like, but that's just the way that the season is at the start. So yeah, for Kelly, a really good positive start now that they've got a goal scorer.
There's five European places next season, I'm sure Scotland's getting. So you know, I think the fifth one's for the Scottish Cup winner, but chances are that's going to be, well, Celtic chances are, but if it's not Celtic, it's going to be another team that's, you know, finishing the top four of the league. So fifth place could well be another Euro shot, KC. You fancying your chances there?
Well,
I think it would be the Conference League, by the way, as opposed to the actual.
I forgot that about that thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But if we do, I'll learn my lesson this time, not to get carried away and book flights to Belgrade before taking care of a part-time mob for Wales.
Yeah, lots to get excited about. I think Chris Burke as well, we kind of talk about him, it seems like, every single week, just in a passing mention. And, you know, he's scored three goals already, he's set up another two. Kelly have only scored, well, they have scored 12 goals this season, so Burke's contributed almost half of them in goals and assists. And at the age of 36, Fisher, he just keeps going, and he's just like, every time I see him, I just think he looks brilliant.
Yeah, I think certainly when he came through at Rangers, the potential was always there. And then when he left, I think it was just kind of inconsistency. Plus, at the time, to be fair to him, there were probably players in his position that were better than him. But he obviously went down south, came back up, and since he's been at Kilmarnock, he's been a fairly consistent performer any time I've seen him. Obviously, at 37 as well, Casey's even talking about giving him another year. So it is good to see. And as you said, the stats are very, very impressive, and he's one of Kilmarnock's key players. So you know, fair play to him. It's certainly not, or he certainly wasn't a player from his time at Rangers, and obviously that's biased on my behalf, but certainly not a player from that time when I remember him that I would have thought he would still be playing at this level at this age. So it's a fair play to him, and in terms of, for Kilmarnock's case, you know, long may it continue.
St Mirren were doing not so bad at the start of the season. They won two of their first three games, kept clean sheets in two of those games. In fact, the only goals they conceded was at Ibrox. Then I went to see them in late August. They drew that game against Ross County, and since then, they've lost five games in a row. Does anyone want to take St Mirren? And, you know, we've got a lot of Buddies fans out there listening to this. Give them a little bit of crumb for comfort that they're going to turn this around, or are we a little bit concerned about what we're seeing?
I mean, you have to obviously be concerned losing five games in the spin, but I still think there are good players there. I mean, it's never great when, obviously, you kind of watch the game and you read the reports and that your goalkeeper was maybe your best player in Jack Anik coming back in. But obviously, circumstances in terms of and that, you know, during their good run of form, they had a game against Celtic postponed that was then obviously right in the middle of this bad run of form. They've had the situation with the goalkeepers as well, and I just think they're going through a bit of a tough spell at the moment. I still believe that the two sides above them, St Johnstone and Hamilton, are worse than them, and it is very tight. And that's the thing, as we've kind of alluded to already on the pod, one or two teams above them has a bad run of form and St Mirren pick up a couple of points and then it all turns around. So I still think, although they don't look great at the moment, I still believe they've got better players than they're showing. And whilst I never thought that they would be sort of anything other than, you know, kind of relegation candidates, I'm still fairly confident that they won't go down this season and that they'll go on a run of form. And yeah, but it is tough, and I completely understand why St Mirren fans would be worried, because they haven't really looked great, and I think the main problem is that they're not scoring their chances. Obviously, they've got Christian Dennis is still kind of coming back from injury. He's a pretty prolific goal scorer down south. So if they can get him back and maybe just get a kind of settled squad after a period of uncertainty, then I think they can turn it around.
So negatives for St Mirren there, positives for Killie, despite what the ever cynical Callum Scott says about his own team. Hey, I've got a question for you guys. What do Ryan Christie, Nicky Clark, Lauren Shankland and Kemar Roof all have in common? I don't know why I'm giving you time to answer, because you just won't get it. They've all scored less or fewer league goals than Hakim Odofin this season.
Oh,
the big Aki's, man, he's got three. Big centre back for Aki's, he's got three goals after, like, what is it, eight games or something. He scored again at the weekend in their draw against Dundee United, and he finishes like a pro, that guy.
Well, I'm fairly certain he'd either only scored one goal or he hadn't scored at all in his professional career before this kind of spell. I'm certain I heard that on Saturday.
No, I think that's right, because I just had a kind of quick look at your stats there, but it was only kind of Wikipedia going on there, so the less said about that, the better. But it's only got his three goals listed for Aki's thus far. But no, I, you know, you say that, Hamish, but remember his first goal against Motherwell, they missed two sitters before it, and we're sitting slating him. Then the big man ends up, it was a great header, I think it was a diving header or whatever at the near post, and then obviously he's went scored against us last week and then scored again this weekend. So nah, fair play to him. I said we've all been worried about Aki's, but if you've got a centre half banging in goals for set pieces every other week, then bite your hand off for that.
He used to be a striker. I was reading between the ages of 9 and 12 he was a striker a winger. And now he's a
that doesn't count, man.
We were all a striker at 9 years old. Everyone wants to be there. Oh dear. That's like Josh McGuinness. Josh McGuinness is a goalie, and then Aberdeen signed him a year later. And then Craig Brown made him a right back for no reason.
Oh. What a disaster. But well done to Hakim Odofin, who I maintain is one of the worst players ever to play in Scotland, but he's continually silencing me with his goals. You know, he's on course for the Golden Boot this year. He's doing well. And Aki's are in course probably to doing all right this season. They got a 1-1 draw against Dundee United. Another stat I've got, Aki's have conceded a goal in the first 15 minutes of their last four games. So they're clearly not starting matches very well, but fair play to them. Like, they are fighting back in games. They, you know, they came back to get a draw against Dundee United at the weekend. They fought back a little bit against Killie with 10 men, I think. No, sorry, it was you guys with 10 men the week before. And they fought back at Livingston the week before as well from behind to win that game. So they're showing fight, Casey, but for Dundee United as well, maybe after getting that early goal, a little bit disappointing they couldn't win that game.
No, absolutely. I think that, as I said, we obviously got to credit Aki's for being able to get ourselves back into the game. But, I mean, they didn't really do much. So, to really kind of realistically score for one of their only chances of the game is can only be a positive. But if I was a United fan, I wouldn't be worried. I thought that they controlled large parts of the game. In another day, they could have won there by a couple. Nicky Clark missed a really good chance at 1-0 that usually you would bet on him finishing. But no, as I said, I wouldn't be worried if I was a United fan. As I said, Aki's have been, well, unless you're Andrew Gamble, I've been the surprise package this season already. We're like getting written off all the time, and as you keep saying, they continue to fight back. So no, with United, I thought that they controlled large parts of the game, and I think they're probably about the kind of, again, if you want to try and split into the league a wee bit here, again, obviously top 4 are miles away, I'd say Kilmarnock and Dundee United are likely the best out of the rest of them. And I'm not just saying that because of their current standings in the league, but I think players-wise and squad...
Motherwell in there as well.
Well, it's... We'll come on to Motherwell, but aye, squad-wise, Motherwell should be there, but I mean, their start to the season's been absolutely horrific, so we'll come on to them later. But I would say so far, and obviously the league table conveys that, the United are level above, and again, it's something that I wouldn't really be worried about. And obviously, I like Mickey Mellon as well. I think he's done well if he's come in.
Definitely. Lauren Shankland, obviously a big positive as well. I think when we're touching Dundee United, it's quite easy every single week to make it about Shankland, and they do have 10 other players, and you know, Shankland, I don't think he's played much this season other than the last couple of weeks and I think the first game of the season, but he has scored 2 goals now. He scored in his last 2 games, Matt, and he's starting to look like a player who can certainly score goals at the top league.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right to point out that it's always highlighted each week of, you know, before it was like, oh, Shankland's still not kind of in around it. Obviously, he was injured and that, and he played the first game and then was out for 4 or 5 weeks. So, yeah, to get back in amongst the goals, I mean, 2 very different goals in the last week, you know, his cracker kind of overhead kick. And then it was a typical kind of poacher's finish at the weekend, which is kind of where you need your number 9 to be. And I think for Dundee United, they know that they've got him there, you know, and it's about getting the kind of rest of it. You know, I think defensively they looked okay. You know, there are a few lapses, I mean, point in the case at the weekend, but, you know, they'll be absolutely fine. And if you're a Dundee United fan, again, albeit it's only 4 points, you know, clear of the kind of the rest of them, if you're sitting right now on 11 points with some big results there, you'll be okay. And like, as I said, if Shanklin's in around it, then, you know, they're going to do well this season, you know. So he's a very good striker. We know how good he is, and for me, I'd like to see him keep scoring so then he could have a chance with Scotland, you know, because I think that he's the kind of player that we're going to be needing. So yeah, for
you
United,
not heard the name Lyndon Dykes.
I know, and I totally get that as well, but like Shankland, if you can get him playing, you know, especially if like Griffiths isn't going to be in the team, then you're going to be needing a couple of those boys up front anyway.
Yeah, so that was Dundee United 1, Hamilton 1 in Lanarkshire. Really good run from Logan Chalmers as well, I thought, for the goal as well. Really kind of positive run that set up that goal in the end for Shankland. The other game that was on Saturday was Livingston St Johnson, 2-0 home win for Livy. A real Air United connection there. You'll be delighted to see KC and the 2 Livy goals. We had Scott Tiffany and Alan Forrest grabbing them, and I think they kind of assisted each other's goals as well, which was quite good. Obviously Tiffany, the new kind of Lyndon Dykes, if you will, at Livingston, and just signs there, Fisher, that they're kind of getting back to what they do best. I know they had that aforementioned collapse at home to Hamilton a couple of weeks ago, but I think they've kept 3 clean sheets now in the last 4 home games, which is the Livingston that we know.
Yeah, definitely. The discussion I think we had just around as we were coming back from the international break was, I think we all thought that Livingston would probably move on from their poor start to the season, use the international break to kind of reflect, get themselves together, and that's what they have done. Obviously, they've lost the last couple of games, but then in saying that, last week put in a really good showing, I think, at Parkhead, and then this game was pretty important because obviously if you lose to St Johnston there, then it starts to pick up a trend again at Livingston not being able to get results, particularly at home. But as you mentioned, that's more like the Livingston we know, taking care of business at home and then away from home, getting the odd result as well and pushing themselves up the table and away from safety. So I did expect that on Saturday, I must admit. I was fairly confident that Livingston would get the win, and obviously they did, and looked pretty impressive from what I saw doing it.
It looked like the most scrappiest game in the world for what I caught for the highlights. It just looked like there was blocks and bodies flying everywhere,
see,
in 18 yard
box. See the challenge, I think it's on Forrest.
I thought it could have been a red man. Like, he's in like almost 2 foot, it studs in, bang, absolutely crunched him. And obviously Tiffany does well to obviously still get a goal with it, but no, I thought that was a horrible challenge. But obviously if he hadn't put that in the net, there'd maybe been screams for a penalty. Well, you'd like to think there'd be screams for a penalty there, but no, as I said, great result for Livy. St Johnson, concerned. I've seen a lot of their fans are saying that they think they've got like the smallest squad in the league. This moment in time, obviously, just added Craig Bryson last week. Obviously, an internationalist player that I really like, but I don't know if he's the answer to their problems. To be honest, I think that I do like Callum Hendry, but I don't think it's clear to see they don't score enough goals. I think that, what is it, it's only three goals they've scored in the league this season?
Four.
Aye, well, aye, so like Kabamba Kelly's scored already the same amount of goals as St Johnstone's entire team, and we're not exactly high flying, you know what I mean? So it's a great concern for them there. So obviously the window's still open for another couple of weeks yet, but I'd be expecting a striker in there to kind of, I don't know, to try and convert some of these chances.
Aye, the, as you say, that kind of alarming goal record, four goals, but an even more alarming stat, they've lost the first goal in eight of their nine games so far this season, which kind of tells you that they're a team that are struggling. Like, obviously, they've come back in a few games. They do have 7 points on the board. They came from behind to beat you lot, for example, at Rugby Park, but every other game apart from the St Mirren home win, they've lost the first goal, which to me, Matt, suggests that this is a St Johnstone team that we could be getting used to seeing down the bottom of the table.
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry. It's obviously, it's an interesting time for them, you know, with Callum Davidson coming in, you know, you can obviously implement a bit his ideas and so on, but the squad, you know, it's a funny one for St Johnstone because they've always had ambitions ever since, like, the kind of the height of Tommy Wright's kind of era, really, you know, where they were top six regularly. They were obviously in the cup finals and so on. I mean, that just seems like so far away now. I think, you know, like you, even like all that, you know, like it's just a bit of a scrap, but they've not really had a, like a relegation scrap properly. I think this year.
This is a year.
Yeah, I think there's every chance because, I mean, we've said a bit enough before on the pod about like how a couple of wins just makes all the odds. I mean, you look at St Mirren, if they didn't have that couple of wins at the start of the season, they'd be, you know, they'd be cut adrift at the moment. So they need to kind of focus on, you know, whether it's getting the goals up front. I mean, I know Stevie May's up front. He's always, you know, he's always trying. You can tell he's trying, chases down everything, but he's just not the goal scorer he was anymore. Like, he clearly isn't. I mean, you saw that enough at Aberdeen. So for them, they just need to kind of find that balance right across the team if they can. But it's going to be a slog for them this season, I think. And St Johnstone fans, unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to get used to that.
I think it could be a long season ahead for St Johnstone. Who would have predicted that at the start of the season? Probably me, actually. Because I think I had them. Did I have them bottom of the league?
I had them 11th and I had Hamilton
12th. I've got St Mirren bottom.
Oh, I had Hamilton bottom. Aye. Yeah, I had St Johnstone. I think it's the same as you, Fisher, I think. So we'll see what happens. Right.
Just one more thing, St Johnstone. I just think that, obviously, I kind of touched on it, but I just don't think there's enough balance to their squad whatsoever. I think they've got a really, really young defence, and then the midfield in attack is really, really an ageing squad there. Obviously, you've got a couple of young players, obviously, Alan McCann, Callum Hendry. Good players, obviously McCann in the midfield and Hendry up top, but other than that, it's a really aging squad. But the defence, I don't think there's enough experience there. There's guys that have played enough Premiership games, but they're missing, obviously, remember Stephen Anderson and stuff back in the day. They've not got anything like that before. Whereas the good St John's teams have been built on those kind of foundations, Fraser Wright and stuff before him. So I don't know. Like I don't think there's enough. But obviously that's. Like to do with the budget, I'd assume, because there's just not enough balance to the squad, which I think will be a concern as well.
It doesn't fill you with much confidence if Callum Hendry's not scoring and then you're bringing him off to replace him with Chris Kane to try and get your goals. Do you know what I mean? It's just the quality's not really there, and I think it's really showing in these games.
You saw them at the start of last season, they were really poor as well, but the difference then was they had a manager,
the experienced manager,
didn't panic, yeah. And also they had a manager they could trust in, whereas now I mean, I've heard decent things about Callum Davidson and they've had a few decent results this season, and they've probably been unlucky in some games and very fortunate in others at Rugby Park, but they've probably got a manager now that if they do keep struggling now for the next couple of months, I mean, we obviously never want to see anyone out of a job, but you wonder if he would be one of the first managers to go if things kind of kept going, if St Johnstone kept struggling, because you look around him and most other managers have maybe got a wee bit more experience about them. I mean, like managers like Mickey Mellon and that at Dundee United, and even Brian Rice has been longer in the door. Jim Goodwin, I wouldn't see St Mirren parting company with him early on. But I just wonder if if St Johnson would, you know, stick with Callum Davidson if they were languishing at the bottom of the table in a couple of months' time. Anyway, we shall move on to the Sunday action. It was a half and half weekend in the Premiership. Three games on Saturday, we've covered them, and three games on Sunday as well due to the Europa League stuff. Before we do that quickly, Matt, what did you think of Sporting Lisbon Aberdeen? Just very briefly, I'll give you 10 seconds if you want.
I thought we were very much in the game, just a sloppy goal to concede me a classy finish, but it's a little bit, again, a similarity, I think, for the fans, like that.
That's great, Matt. And play. Fisher, what did you make of the Rangers game in Holland against Willem II?
It was great. It was sort of unexpected on my end. I thought we would struggle, but after the first goal, a nervy cut first couple of minutes, but we were very comfortable after that.
Do you want to take Motherwell, seeing as your team's not in Europe, Casey?
Not really, no.
Sound fair enough. And I'm not going to comment on Celtic either, because it was one of the worst games I've ever witnessed. But I guess we're through, and that's the main thing. Right, Sunday's action. I'll let you talk for longer here, Matt. Ross County 0, Aberdeen 3.
Yeah, very, very good result. I missed the game. I was away for the weekend.
That's good.
But no, I've obviously seen the highlights in that. And judging by the reports and so on, I mean, could have been 3-0 up after about 10 minutes. I think you hit the post a few times. From Aberdeen point of view, though, seeing Marlon Watkins scoring is very, very good. I know he's kind of been
first goal for the club.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Ross County keeper doesn't help himself, to be honest with him. I think he should be able to get across that quicker. You know, it's a well placed header, but it's not, you know, it's savable. But yeah, right from the off, Aberdeen looked sharp. You know, I think what you're able to see is the kind of, yeah, we've said it before about how the kind of bigger clubs with bigger squads, they're able to take advantage of the substitute rule, and just now with the bigger bench, and it's quite telling when Aberdeen are able to bring in some players who would walk into most teams. You know, like I think Scott Wright started the season really well. She'd have scored on Saturday, but Sunday, but yeah, very good. And then, you know, that obviously it's penalties. They are definitely penalties, you know, and I think the sending off's correct. Who was it? Sorry, get sent off for County. It was
Vigers.
Yeah, he had a shocking one in the first half on McCrory, I think. And you see it in sports.
The problem is that BBC's highlights only show 2 minute things, so I didn't get to see that Vigers thing you're talking about.
Yeah. It was basically it was down the touchline. McCrory got away from it, and he just, like, he was up in the air behind. It was like a deliberate foul, like on FIFA or something. Honestly, it was shambles, and he got a booking. But I think then obviously I think it was a straight red for the red, and I don't think there was any complaints. But the Aberdeen were very good. You know, Lewis Ferguson started the season off well again. Penalties, just dominant. And you know, for County, it's a bit of a, I know you guys can touch on it a bit more, but they've kind of struggled a wee bit. And For Aberdeen, you know, getting back to winning ways after last week's disaster against Motherwell, which is what it was, you know, it was an absolute shambles defensively. I mean, to then go and be a bit unlucky in Lisbon, you know, coming back into it, getting the 3 points is crucial, but a really good performance. And I think that's what we've been missing last season. Like, while we're able to kind of grind out results, it has gone stale performance-wise, I think, from the fans. And I know the Aberdeen supporters are very divided, but over Dan McInnes and that, but I think this season you are seeing a lot more after the first. If you take away the first game, you know, there's a lot of attack and intent with the team. You know, there's a kind of lot of, you know, they've been able to recruit well. I mean, I know Ross McCrory has been getting a lot of the plaudits, and rightly so, but I think Tommy Hoban's been absolutely superb for the Dons in defence. You know, like, if you're going to get someone who's going to be as good or, you know, around what McKenna really is, you know, Tommy Hoban is that. It's a shame he has to play with it next to Ash Taylor sometimes, because he has obviously got a mistake in him. But no, defensively sound, midfield dominant, and then up front obviously with the goal with Watkins, a very good afternoon for the Dons.
Yeah, looking very good away from home as well this season. You've gone to Ross County, obviously won comfortably, clean sheet, went to Viking 1-2-0, went to Hibs 1-1-0, and one at St Johnstone as well, keeping a clean sheet. So not conceded many goals, if any, away from home. And, you know, for all the chat about how Hibs have been the main revelation this season, it's your lot that are 2 points behind them, and you've got two games in hand. Like, you could feasibly, I think one of those games in hand is against Celtic at Parkhead, to be fair, but you could still be a fair chance you're ahead of of Hibs when you've played the same amount of games. And when everyone's talking about how amazing Hibs have been, I think that kind of speaks volumes for how Aberdeen have been.
It always happens. Every season, like I remember when Hibs came up, it was always like, oh, you know, they're going to be challenged. And they had a very good season. But, you know, it's just that kind of like, you talk about experience, but Derek McInnes does know how to get results a lot of the time. I mean, it can be a slog. Last season was a slog. But, you know, you kind of bring in some players that you know is like Johnny Hayes, I think, has been very good. He still has that pace, that drive forward. It's like, you know, and then being able to kind of recruit well, but then also kind of trying new systems. I mean, they're playing a 3-5-2 this season, which in McInnes' time has never worked for Aberdeen, but it actually seems to be working right now. So long may that continue. But as you said, I mean, the Hibs rightly do get praise. I think they've always been like a pretty good team to watch, you know, but end of the day, you know, they're not really done anything like in the time they've come up. You know, some big results and so on, but you know, I think Aberdeen are kind of, you know, they constantly show that they are a better team.
Have we touched on an Edinburgh bias here? Do you think, guys, why are Hibs always seen as such a great revelation in the team who can, you know, do all the amazing stuff, and Aberdeen don't really get that credit? I think it's a fair point.
I think it's because we take, well, the media and everyday associated with Scottish football take Aberdeen for granted because of how good they have been since McInnes has come in. They're consistently the best of the rest. Hibs come back up, obviously. Nishlander Lennon playing some really good football, exciting football, obviously got to Ibrox and winning and stuff. And one of the criticisms of McInnes has been maybe his record against the Old Firm at times isn't as great, but he knows how to beat everybody else in the league and consistently does it. I think it is. It's just a case that, I mean, Hibs always seem, well, as if they do play better football, Aberdeen get results, but when Aberdeen get results, they finish above everybody else in the league, out with the Old Firm more often than not. So I do. I think it's just a case of taking Aberdeen and McInnes for granted.
Well, Hibs were in action as well on Sunday. They were at Celtic Park. They went down to a 3-0 defeat. I saw this game. Big shout out to, well, I was about to say fan of the podcast, but he's kind of like a founding member of the podcast, Lewis Kemp, who gave me his pass to paradise. I got to see the game by legal means. And it was absolutely brilliant. I thought Celtic, for all of the chat about how poor we were against Riga on Thursday night, and we were absolutely diabolical in that game. One of the worst football matches I think I've ever come across. I thought we were really good on Sunday against a Hibs side that has been really good so far this season, and the vast majority of their good results have come away from home as well. And they did have a few chances in the game, but nothing massively clear-cut. And I think in comparison, we had lots and lots of really good chances. Just so many positives to come for the game. Jeremy Frimpong looking like our best player at the moment. Completely roasted Josh Doig, who I think is decent enough to the extent where Josh Doig was substituted at half-time and Lewis Stevenson was brought on just to try and save face because Doig was getting torn to pieces. I think Frimpong tore him apart like 5 or 6 times. It was the biggest doing I think I've seen in a long time watching football. So Frimpong was a massive positive. David Turnbull as well came on. It wasn't his debut, but it was his first kind of proper game. I think he came on for a few minutes against County, but he was he was brilliant. He just looked like a player that was ready to play for Celtic, and I think he's one really to watch this season. And yeah, it's just the difference a win can do in a good performance, because I'm now looking ahead to, you know, the game against Rangers on the 17th of October, and I'm getting excited about it, when a couple of days ago after the Riga game, I was dreading it because of how poor we were. So massively positive stuff. Did any of you catch any of the Celtic game, and you get anything to add that's non-Celtic biased?
I thought, again, I wasn't surprised at all. I did. If it was at Easter Road, I think it could have been a different story, but I had absolutely no concerns that Celtic would make do with Hibs. Hence why I actually took Doig out my fantasy team for Sunday, because I knew that they would concede and concede quite a few. But I kind of sort of, well, you say I'm Mr. Negative here, right? But I'd be concerned if I was a Celtic. I seen a couple of tweets as well. Obviously, I didn't catch 90 minutes or anything. People saying hopefully that's like, Shane Duffy can't be fully fit. If he is, then we're in bother. And the only one that I caught really was Nisbet brushing him off the ball, like,
yeah,
for the kind of Hibs' kind of half chance in the first half. I thought Duffy was meant to come in to get rid of all that and eradicate that for the Celtic defence, because they're all going about how Julian and I are too soft. Nisbet's a good wee player, I like him, but I mean, if he bullied Duffy in that sense, then I think that'd be, like, I'd be concerned if I was a Celtic fan with that. I know it's only one, that's only one highlight I've seen of that, but I thought Duffy was meant to come in to eradicate all of that, so it'll be interesting to see if he is all that he's made up to be. But then again, the guy scored in his first couple of weeks and kept clean sheets and was doing the simple stuff really well. But I'm interested to hear your view on that. I haven't watched the 90.
He was caught out a few times. There was another one, the Nisbet one was down the left hand side, and there was another one down the Hibs right that was maybe Nisbet again, and he kind of, I don't know, it's something he's been doing a wee bit where he's almost like, he had a moment against County in his debut where he almost just let Billy Mackay in, and it's almost as if he's just not quite sure, and I don't know exactly where that's coming from. He's obviously not played much football at all over the last 6 months, or, well, no one has, but even prior to that with Brighton last season. So maybe it comes from match sharpness, maybe it comes from taking the Scottish game a little bit lightly. I don't know. I've got no real doubts over him, because from what I've heard from loads of Brighton fans saying that he's probably one of their best actual defenders. The problem at Brighton was that he couldn't really play with his feet. So I've got no doubts that he'll end up being a standout in Scotland. I just think it's maybe taking him a bit of time to get up to speed. Moment when Nisbet is fair, and Nisbet isn't exactly a big burly striker, and he did just brush him out the way. But I think as well he was mainly up against Doig throughout the match, and Doig barely had a kick, and Duffy actually had a really good block later on in the game as well. I don't think the highlights showed it, but it was just brilliant. But I think the whole Celtic defence still looks a bit ropey. I think they're still getting to know the goalkeeper. Got to remember, you've got a new goalkeeper and a new centre back, and probably a new formation as well. We're back three, so it's a lot happening at the same time. But I think over time it'll come, and it was a clean sheet, two in a row. So yeah, I think there's certainly some worries there. I don't know, worries actually, concerns maybe. But I think he'll end up being a standout for us. But yeah, just massively positive. I thought Hibs, as I say, had some chances, but I just think they came up against a Celtic team playing really well. Like, I don't think Hibs were too bad, really. I just think they came up against a Celtic team that was in the top of their game. So a big win for Celtic, 3-0. Another, well, I was about to say an equally big win, but it was an even bigger margin of victory for Rangers at Motherwell. 5-1 it finished at Fir Park. I watched this game approximately 29 minutes or something, however long it took Rangers to go 3-0 up, and then I turned it off. It was one-way traffic, basically from the first 40 seconds when Morelos nearly puts Rangers 1-0 up and on. I know it was penalties that mainly put Rangers ahead, but it was never in doubt that game, was it, Fisher?
No, I thought, going into the game, certainly looking at the lineup, I was a little bit concerned, just because obviously it was Bassey's debut against a kind of streetwise Motherwell team, if you like, and then you had Jordan Jones, who has been a bit of an enigma since his time at Rangers. But we started off superbly, as you mentioned, Morelos' chance in the first half, and then we just didn't really look back after that. We were dominant. I mean, the build-up play for Jones' goal in particular is excellent, and the finish is really good, and it looked at times like we could have probably taken more than five. I thought we maybe eased off in the second half until the substitutes came on, and then obviously Itten grabs two. Particularly his first goal was just such a brilliant touch and great finish. And I think apart from Mark O'Hara had a free kick saved by McGregor, and then obviously the goal that hits off Edmondson to make it 5-1. We were really, really comfortable, and I completely understand Motherwell have had a tougher European game on Thursday than we did, and certainly had to go much longer distance as well. But I did expect a little bit more from them. But Rangers just took care of business yesterday, and that's what you want, particularly after a European tie. But going even further back than that, particularly after a performance against Hibs last week, where a lot of people were coming away from it going, these are the type of games that cost us challenging for the title. So to come back out on the back of that after a very good performance on Thursday, as I mentioned previously, to kind of sweep Motherwell aside, I mean, it can't really ask for much more than that from a Rangers perspective.
Two penalties Motherwell conceded. That same conceded eight this season. Eight penalties. And we're only in, what, not even in October yet.
How many of them's McGabby gave away?
he's making a name for himself, and that surname doesn't need any done to it, but he's doing the best thing. He really is making a name for himself, that guy. Clumsy, wasn't he, for the first one? I mean, what's he doing with his arm out like that?
I do think that, like, it's 100% a penalty. I'm not disputing that, but like, I've no caught it fully. I didn't watch the full game. I listened to it because I was working yesterday. But is Arfield not quite clever? Does he not actually, like, duck out the way? Or is that just for the angle that I've seen?
I think he's done that. Yeah, they highlighted it on Sports Scene. They said that because obviously, like it's not going to hit him if Arfield's just standing there. Mm-hmm. Like, if Arfield doesn't duck, like, but obviously it's the way it is. I don't know, because he's obviously not anticipating the duck, but I think it is a bit smarter for Arfield. He's probably thinking, I mean, he's actually possibly come off and said, look, I didn't even mean that at all. I've just been an arse of the header, you know. But I think he is being a bit smarter, if you want to give him a bit of credit for that. But yeah, it's a bit,
If you watch Arfield a lot, he's quite good at kind of like dummy runs and stuff like that. So he'll come in front of a player to try and take a pass, and then he'll kind of quickly run back behind to try and take the pass, so it could well have been one of that. But Arfield, actually, funny you should mention Arfield, I thought he was fantastic again yesterday. I think I might have mentioned this in the podcast last week. Obviously, the 2 summers previous, he's been away with Canada and stuff like that, and obviously at his age, I think a lot of supporters were kind of questioning whether it was the best thing for him, and maybe the fact that he had such an extended layoff, as pretty much all footballers did over the past couple of months, has done him well, because with Ryan Jack being out, Aribo being out, Hadji being off form, Arfield's came in and he's shown why. He's obviously played at English Premier League level and stuff like that for quite a number of years. I thought he was fantastic yesterday. A really, really strong performance from him, and obviously if he's intentionally ducked to win as a penalty as well, that's even better.
Sorry, I'm just still getting over that incisive punditry from Matt Finlay. He's just anticipated the duck.
Is that a podcast title?
Are we passing that off as genuine Scottish football punditry nowadays? Fair enough, if we are, then that's fair enough. I thought Rangers were just pretty good from the limited bits that I saw. The Jordan Jones goal, I'll give you the final say, Callum Scott. Mm. Because you obviously know Jordan Jones. His first goal for Rangers, I think I'm right in saying. Is that right?
And yeah,
first start and 13 finish as well. I know. I knew when I seen Jones was starting, I knew that he was going to do well yesterday.
That's exactly what Gerrard said.
No, I knew when I said he'll come in and he'll have a good game. I fancied him to score as well. So, no, credit where it's due. I mean, listen, I can sit and slag Jones and that about how he left us and stuff. It's not the fact he went Rangers, it's the manner in which he'd done it. But no, on his day, Jordan Jones is a very, very good player. There's absolutely no getting away from that. And for Rangers to bring in, as you said, a couple of fringe players, if you will, yesterday, and steamroller, we can say how bad Motherwell have been all season, but away from home, going absolute hammer a relatively decent side in the Premiership 5-1 is unbelievable. And Rangers didn't go to second gear, they were absolutely brilliant. When Jones came in, I just knew he was going to be at it. A big criticism of Jones before is maybe his final ball isn't the ideal. But surprisingly, maybe it's because of how bad he sometimes is with his right foot. His weak foot with his left, he's actually pretty decent at as well. Like, I mean, and you can see that with his finish. Obviously, it was a very good finish with his weak foot across Carson, posting in. But no, I'm not going to say I'm delighted for him, because that would be a bit too strong a word to say. And I think I'd be hung, drawn and quartered by Kilmarnock fans for that. But he's shown exactly what he's capable of. But you're never going to get that every week with Jones. His consistency is no there, but there's a player there when called upon, and he'll definitely add something. Any team, that pace is frightening. He's flying, and that's what he does. He gets away for the boy, Arfield slips him through, and it's a great finish, and the build-up before that was top class as well. And no, that's a credit to him, and as I said, he's shown exactly what he is capable of, but who knows whether he'll be there for long. Maybe that's in the short window and a Championship team will come in and buy him. I don't know.
Right, we move on. Thursday night, Europa League, only 2 Scottish teams remaining. Celtic away to the Bosnian champions, FK Sarajevo, 7 o'clock Thursday night. Rangers, 45 minutes after that, they'll be getting underway at home to Galatasaray. 1-2, both teams going through. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I think both teams are going through. I think Rangers are playing really well just now, and I know that it's different playing at home without the fans, because I think this is a kind of night that the Rangers fans would be absolutely relishing. You know, they'd be all over it. So I think for them, it's just about kind of continuing like where they've been left off, you know, that playing with that intensity, regardless of who the opponent is, it really doesn't matter. I mean, you saw them last week in Holland, like, unreal. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, Will and Tui weren't that great, obviously, but, like, the fact that they're able to go away to Holland and score four goals, I think, is just, because the Dutch league's a good league, you know, the top teams in Holland are good. It's the same, and it'll be the same in Turkey. You know, Galatasaray, you know, they're a big club, known right across Europe in that, like, obviously high spending and that, but I really fancy Rangers to get the job done here. I think that if, you know, maybe their run's not been that tricky compared to, you know, like, previous years and so on, I think, but you really will fancy them here. It's and then same with Celtic. I mean, they know how to get the job done in these kind of games. I mean, you saw it last week, albeit a scrappy game, they'll fancy their chances, and I'd be very surprised, to be honest, if both teams don't go through.
It's good that we're in that place, isn't it, where we're looking at these two games, and I fully expect both teams to go through and make it back to the group stage, and, you know, that's just more coefficient points, hopefully. I mean, we could be sitting Friday morning with both teams out, and in a way I wouldn't be absolutely massively surprised if either did, because I think Rangers are up against a good team, and I think Celtic are going to, like, quite a tough place. I understand that it's not their actual stadium in Sarajevo, I think it's somewhere else, Celje or something, their stadium in Bosnia. But from a Celtic point of view, I think we'll do the business. I think we'll build from the win over Hibs, and we played Sarajevo twice last year, beat them both games. So I fancy us to do it, and likewise with Rangers. Fisher, you'll probably know better than me, but Galatasaray, a few good players in there, but just that typical kind of Turkish football type thing, all those typical names, Arda Turan and Falcao and Ryan Babel, who just seem to always be floating about these clubs. But I just fancy Rangers, knowing what I know about them, to win that at Ibrox.
Yeah, as Matt kind of touched on, it's obviously got no to be able to go to any games, but Ibrox for this in particular would be pretty unreal. So that kind of doesn't dampen it a wee bit, but it's just kind of, it's disappointing. But yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, Galatasaray have got some cracking players there. As you mentioned, Falcao, probably one of the best strikers that's played in Europe in the past kind of 10-15 years. But funnily enough, I wasn't really confident ahead of the Will and Tui game, but this game at Ibrox, I just think the players are going to be up for it. We do tend to perform really, really well against the big side, well, against most sides in Europe, but particularly against the big sides. You look at Porto last season, the comeback against Braga, obviously Feyenoord as well. The only game under Gerrard across the board that we've been kind of outclassed in is Bayer Leverkusen, and I think they're considerably better than this Galatasaray team. So, yeah, looking forward to it. Nervous for it, don't get me wrong, but I think if we play the way we've been playing and we go off to a really kind of fast start, play the football that we want to play, then I'm confident we can do the business. And even on the Celtic side, I'm fairly confident that Celtic are going to go and win that game as well.
The draw is then on Friday, I believe. So the next time we're doing a podcast, we could have a draw to look back on. Hopefully with both Scottish teams, both Glasgow teams in the Europa League group stage. Fantasy football, we still all doing this, guys? Anyone giving up the ghost?
Not quite yet. I felt like it after last week, but I'm kind of back on form this week, thanks to, well, primarily thanks to Lewis Ferguson.
Your team name, Onion Hadji.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's a fella here, Douglas Stevens, who's third in the Burst Ball League, who's also Onion Hadji. So who's copied who here?
Well, I had it from, like, the first day of having fantasy football, so I would like to copyright that name, and I must insist. What's the guy's name, sorry?
Douglas Stevens. We don't know if he's a listener.
If you are a listener, or if indeed anybody that does listen knows this man, I must insist that you get him to change his name immediately, or you'll be hearing from my lawyer.
Good week, though. 85 points. That is tremendous.
That is some haul.
Tavernier got 28, Barca 7, Ferguson as well, 13. Second, Kenny Gardner, DF11 is his team name, 539 in total. And the leader, he's been the leader quite a lot this season, although I think he was second last week, Craig Dallas, total of 545. He gets 79 at the weekend. So Craig Dallas is a man to beat in the Burst Ball League. I'm just scrolling down. I can't see any names that we know. So I think Lewis Kemp's doing quite well, isn't he, in his team? But I think he's He's well off the pace. He's got 478 is his total for the season, and the actual bus ball leader is on 545. So Kemp's away down in 51st joint in the bus ball league.
Fair play to Ryan Crombie that's yet to clear 300 points yet for the season.
He got like 4 pointers from in 1 week. It was something ridiculous.
He must have given up because he's still got like John McLaughlin as his keeper. He's got Edward as his vice captain. Not a good week for him.
To be fair, McLaughlin only came out the team last week. But I know what you mean.
It's two strikers, Edward and Chris Long, got a combined total of 2 points this week.
So I was hoping you'd have Lyndon Dykes or something still.
I was going to say, I thought my cousins might be in like the top 30 in the bus ball league, because he's like 480 odd points, and now you get 88 points yesterday, which was just ridiculous. Unfortunately, and everybody was saying to me the weekend, and he was running away with our league on Saturday, never mind the day he had yesterday with Tavernier, Frimpong, McGregor, Ferguson, all playing yesterday. They got mad points. Everybody was telling me to just call my private league, because and declare it null and void to prevent Fingers from winning the league, which he's absolutely romping it now. So couldn't happen to a worse guy, so there you go.
You never know, we might get a second peak and a second lockdown, and then we'll have the league called anyway, and he can run away with it that way. So that's what we've got to look forward to, guys, but thanks very much for joining me on this podcast. Thanks very much to everyone for listening as well. As we usually say, if you're not yet following us on Twitter, Facebook, all those kind of things, give it a go. Tell a pal about the podcast, and we'll be back very soon. Until next time, take care and have a good week.